The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I am back alongside my, my yin to my yang. He's my Washington to my football club, Mr. Mark Ellis.
Hey. Soon, have your fun while you can, Jacqueline, because soon
I know
my football team is going to have a real name. Here's where I'm at in my life right now. I am so excited because, and if you're viewing the show right now, you can see me wear some of my new athletic clothing that I got last night. And I love buying new stuff to wear at the gym. Here's the problem. It gets so comfy and it's great lounge wear. And I know what's going to happen. I'm going to sweat through all of this, and it's just going to be gross in a month. And so, you know, when you get new sweats and it just feels so good right out of the bag, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm in my comfort zone, and then I'm going to have to eventually go exercise.
You know what's really funny is I actually had to go shopping for workout clothes because, let's be honest, the beginning of the pandemic was good. I got down to, like, freshman high school weight, and then we discovered Postmates, and it all went to hell in a handcart. But I'm back on my fitness wagon. One of these days, you're going to see me and Mark running 10Ks. And we're going to bring our guest along with us because I know he is also a fitness guru on top of being a huge Star Wars fan.
Yeah, he's a gym buff.
He's a gym buff. Exactly right. We brought him along today to talk about Solo in honor of the Book of Boba Fett, which is out now on Disney Plus. They're doing weekly episodes, so you guys be sure to tune into that one. But we're going to talk about Solo. This one came in at 70% fresh with a tomato meter of 60%, 64% on the audience score. And John, not Connor, from Sanford, Florida. I want to call you John Connor, though. He calls this film When Harry Met Chewie, which I think is very cute. But our guest today, I think, has some love for this because he wrote a book called Why We Love Star Wars. He's also the co-host of Force Center Podcast. He's a comedian who tours alongside the one and only Mr. Mark Ellis. Ken Natsok, sir, are you ready to talk a little Solo?
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you all. I've had one of those days. I dropped water on my computer and all my fancy camera equipment doesn't work. It's just the MacBook like I'm on AOL chat. And I love it, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy that you are here as well. More importantly, though, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about Solo? One of the lowest rated in the Star Wars universe, though not the lowest.
Yeah, I'm gonna say a big yes. It's a relatively fair score, but I'm gonna always angle up with this film.
Okay. All right, Ken, I'm digging with you on that one. Mark, what about you? What are your Solo opinions? Because I don't think we ever talked about this one.
We haven't discussed Solo because it's just one of those Star Wars movies that it's not lost in the ether because every Star Wars movie is such a big event when it gets released. But this one still feels somehow under the radar a few years later because we talk about the classic trilogy or the prequels or the new sequels. And then you sort of remember, hey, there's that Rogue One movie that was really well received. And then Solo with all of the talk and all the noise when that movie was released. I got to revisit it last night, and I had such a fun ride with this movie. It never slows down. It never feels like, oh, boy, we got to drub through this scene. No, it really is just a hoot start to finish. And so I'm going to say that 70% is a little too low. I think we can get this up to the B pluses. I think that if Solo was applying to colleges, it might want to hit a couple safety schools to be safe. I think it could get into a four-year reputable university.
Yeah, I don't think this one's getting into Texas, but it can go to my undergrad school, the University of North Texas. I do believe that it has that potential.
Those green uniforms, I'll take
it. Yeah, the mean green man. Mm-hmm. Our claim to fame is that and the dude that played RoboCop. Listen, I think that Solo is right. I really do. I think 70 is right. Although I will say this score is not the score that it started at. It is actually, I think, risen a bit. And Tim can maybe talk about that when we get into 2 minutes with Tim. But I think the score is about right. I have a weird viewing experience for this movie when I saw it for the first time. And also, I'm going to pre-warn you now that I have, when we get into BTS, I have a little bit of a name drop thing. So I'm just warning you now. I feel guilty about it, but it's a good story. So I can't wait to chat about it. But before we get there, Mark, why don't you give us, if you please, cancer, what happened in Solo, the origin story of one of Star Wars' most famous characters?
Well, whether you're viewing this or listening to it, Jacqueline always has good name drops. And as somebody who's been to a Jacqueline Coley-sponsored event, when she drops a name, it's usually a pretty good one she's picking up off the floor. Now, when we talk about Solo, Jacqueline's exactly right. Han Solo is one of the great characters in all of cinematic history, particularly when you're talking about science fiction, fantasy epics like Star Wars. Han Solo is that sort of character that we really missed having in the prequels. That just fun gunslinger, smuggler, maybe up to no good, maybe he's got a heart of gold, but he's always got a gorgeous dog as his companion. We get to see how Han met Chewie. This is the backstory of Han. So we meet him on Corellia, his home planet, and he's just trying to get out. That's a tough place. It might be like living in Pittsburgh. It's a tough, tough life living in Corellia. On Corellia, and so now we have all these adventures. He gets out, but the love of his life is stranded back in Corellia. Her name is Kira, played by Emilia Clarke. Oh, by the way, did I mention Han Solo? Not played by Harrison Ford. It's Alden Ehrenreich playing the younger version. Donald Glover playing the younger Lando. And so we get to see all these different characters. We meet some new droids along the way, like an L3. Get to meet some new humans along the way, like a Beckett or a Voss, who's the big baddie, played by Paul Bettany here. It's a fun adventure. We get to see how Han Solo became the guy that we meet in Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, at the Mos Eisley Cantina. So it's a fun backstory, and was it entirely necessary to make Jacqueline? We'll talk about all these things.
Yes, we will break all that down. Sorry, I wanted to make sure I got everything right on this one, because if we're talking about Solo, which we're going to get into now, I want to make sure that I pull up a great quote from a friend of ours by name Danny Fernandez. But we'll get to what Danny has to say about Han in a minute, because we have to listen to what Mr. Tim Ryan has to say about what the critics were saying way back when Solo debuted just a few years ago.
2 minutes with Tim.
As Rogue One and The Mandalorian have ably demonstrated, there are a lot of places in the Star Wars universe to explore. So why not give everyone's favorite swashbuckler his own origin story? Well, critics thought Solo, A Star Wars Story, had some good action scenes, and the actors gave their own unique spins on iconic characters, but that it didn't do much to expand the Star Wars mythos. Solo is fresh at 70% with 482 reviews, and it has a 64% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a fresh review, Lindsay Barr of the Associated Press wrote, "Solo is a straightforward piece of pulpy entertainment with some very agreeable performances from Ehrenreich and Glover, who seems to be having the most fun of all the actors." However, in a rotten review, Anupamit Chopra of Film Companion wrote, "What's on screen simply isn't magical enough. It might please diehard fans to know how Han got the last name or how he made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs, but I think even they might be disappointed." The Rotten Tomatoes Critics Consensus reads, "A flawed yet fun and fast-paced space adventure, Solo, A Star Wars Story, should satisfy newcomers to the saga as well as longtime fans who check their expectations at the theater door." So that's Solo. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. Sometimes they even amaze themselves. Back to you, folks.
Yes.
Well done, Timmy.
That was very well done. I always love a good Tim Ryan like pun, little add on there. It's literally what I look forward to every single week. But without further ado, let's go ahead and break down exactly what happened in Solo in our movie talk section. Brian, take it away. Okay, Kim, when did you see Solo? Because I have a feeling this was an epic maybe even Ken and Mark viewing experience. So when did you first see it? What was your first reaction?
I was sitting next to Mark Ellis at the world premiere screening. What a life I used to lead. I don't have that life anymore. being friends with Mark Ellis, I'm saying. Yeah, I did see that, which, you know, being around press can sometimes, as a Star Wars fan, can sometimes be a downer, I will admit. But Mark's not that. It was that's where I saw it first and it was fun.
So first thoughts that night, because if I remember correctly, didn't they put a Millennium Falcon like on Hollywood Boulevard for that premiere? Like, so I'm guessing when you walked out of it, you're probably walking out of it like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. My first car was nicknamed the Millennium Fairmont, so I've been living that life for a while. That absolutely was there. And it's similar to the feeling of Galaxy's Edge. Anytime you see a life-size Millennium Falcon, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, I haven't been to Galaxy's Edge, which bothers so many people, but it's not that I don't want to go see the Millennium Falcon up close. It's that I don't want to walk through the red sea of people that I would have to part to get there and just have a nice, relaxing blue milk at the cantina. But seeing it, anytime you get a chance to see a Star Wars movie, really in a theater early before the movie is released to the public, it is such a privilege that has never been lost on me. I never want to take it for granted. And this movie, though, Jacqueline, I do remember the feeling of just wanting to get in there and hoping it is good and really hoping Alden Ehrenreich pulls it off and he's somebody I can watch as Han Solo for 2 hours, because there was just so much talk and hype, or lack thereof, as far as do we need this movie at all? Why are we making this movie? It's too early to release it after the blowback by fans on The Last Jedi. And so there was a lot of noise, and it was just so nice to get into the theater and have the lights go down, see the Lucasfilm logo, and just be told a Star Wars story from the tellers themselves, as opposed to listening to all of the banter here on Earth.
Yeah, no, that's very true, because the banter on Earth at that time, which we'll get to when we talk about it in BTS, was a lot. So, Ken, obviously you think this is pretty high in your estimation. Where do you put it in your rankings, though? Which I know is a very loaded question for any Star Wars fan, but where do you put it, I would say, of the 10 that we've had, right? Between Rogue One and the original. So, no, 11. We've had 11 total. Where would you put it?
I put it somewhere in that 5, 6, 7 range for me. But the thing I will say about this film is it is one of my go-to Star Wars movies to just have on and enjoy. Star Wars is this wonderful mix of the silly and profound, and this movie is that on every level for me, but it's also just fun. It's that Saturday morning serial pulp adventure that George pulled from his own childhood to retell and tell for new generations. So this strikes all those chords for me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What about you, Mark? Where are you placing it?
I could listen to Ken talk about Star Wars all day. I could listen to Ken talk me to sleep. And Ken, that's not an insult to you. That's just, it just calms me. It's like watching Family Guy at night before I go to bed. You're just the kind of person that can just ease me off into dreamland. I actually had a dream about Solo last night. Like, I was in the movie because I watched it as I was falling asleep. And Ken's right. It's the most cable-friendly Star Wars movie I've seen in a while, where it's like that Jaws or that Independence Day, where if it's on some sort of Ted Turner-owned network, you just kind of have it on in the background while you're cleaning, doing whatever you're doing around your place. And as far as the necessariness of it all, or the way that it plays out against the other sequels, I would probably have it ranked It's definitely above every prequel for me. So just so everybody knows, I love Star Wars, but I'm not going to defend the movies ad nauseum because I'm not that big of a fan of the prequels. I think there's greatness in there, but I don't think they're great movies. I think Solo is such a great adventure, and it's a story that if you didn't know if you wanted it walking into the theater, you're so glad you got it, at least for me, walking out of it. It's nowhere near the classic trilogy for me. I don't know that any Star Wars movie could be, but I think it's right there on par with The Last Jedi. It might not be quite up to Force Awakens or Rise of Skywalker, but I think it's right there competing with the sequel trilogy.
Yeah, I'm a little bit different. I don't have like hatred for Return of the Jedi, the third of the original trilogy, but I actually would place Rogue One higher than it in my estimation, because Rogue One is just fire movie, and like I had the same love for it that I had maybe the first time I saw Empire Strikes Back. But I would put it right, yeah, where Ken has it, maybe at five. In fact, I feel pretty good about that five, because I know for a fact it's going to be everything of the prequels, and then the very last one is going to be the bottom four for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear Ken say that, it's talk about the George Lucas pulp serial adventure aspect of it, because George's close friend Ron Howard came on to direct this movie after Lord and Miller were excused. And this is the most George Lucas-y Star Wars adventure I've seen since George Lucas was actually directing these movies. So as much as I love Force Awakens or Rise of Skywalker, this one felt like George Lucas was making American Graffiti in space, where you have this sort of cowboy who's just driving around town and is just looking for adventure. That's what we get here. And so it's the closest thing probably to George Lucas's vision of what he wanted to tell with other Star Wars stories because of Ron Howard.
Yeah, it's what's interesting about it is, for much as Force Awakens is that requel thing that we now know about, where you literally do the exact same thing over again, Ron Howard did the, hey, I've done 20 years making, you know, Oscar-worthy type films, things that he can do, and he did it. It's like, I don't know, amateurs copy, masters, like amateurs borrow, masters steal outright. Ron Howard stole everything that was in the essence of a George Lucas movie, but managed to do it in a different film. And then J.J. Abrams, I think, just borrowed a whole bunch. And so when you compare the two films, you're like, this one is much more artful. It's just more artful in what it did, in my opinion. And so I actually give it a lot more love. And there's moments in this one that feel just ripped out of a George Lucas movie. Ken, for you, what are these moments that when you look back on Solo is one of the reasons why you're just like, I have to cue it up. If it's on TV, I have to stop. What moments are you waiting for?
The moments include Infus Nest demasking herself, the new face of the rebellion, includes Han Solo and his pursuit of his version of survival and how it is. That's the theme of this. Star Wars is about hope versus fear. It's about finding hope within the fear. And this movie is about how you find that hope is how you choose to survive. And even the opening sequence, which informs the characters of Han and Kira, you survive in Han's world by fighting forward. No real plan, take the resources, move on, and you'll get out. And that's the freedom that you get for yourself, where Kira feels no matter what you try, you can't get out, and I have to thrive in that. So anytime the scenes play back on that theme, which is the core of Star Wars, hope versus fear, that's what ignites me. The character of Infus Nest, shut me up, because I'll talk for 20 minutes about Infus Nest and the power she represents, the powerful position she has in Star Wars in that story. So it's those kind of scenes, and even up to the end where it's not a play. It's not a wink and a nod to Han shot first. It's why Han would shoot first, which was even Larry Kasdan kind of arguing with George over that. And I love that stuff, too.
Yeah, like you watch this movie and you see why Han is so sweet on somebody like Princess Leia, because his relationship with Kira that we see at the beginning of the movie, I learned a long time ago that you could either be a lover or a fighter. I learned that lesson by A.C. Slater from Saved by the Bell. But later on, when you see a character like Han Solo, you see that he loves to fight and he fights to love. It's almost like an earned sort of badge of honor for both of those things. And then when he's running around with Beckett, Woody Harrelson's character, on this adventure that is the bulk of the movie, you see why he is so reticent to be part of a rebellion that he gets offered a chance later on in this movie and in Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And you do see the good guy version of Han. But my favorite scene in this is something that I don't think ever has received enough credit for the degree of difficulty it was to pull off. My brother and I always had a running joke about how come in the classic trilogy we never see Han speak Wookiee's back to Chewie? Like, he can clearly understand what Chewie's saying. How come he never just, you know, it just gives us a little bit of a roar? It happens in this movie. Han can actually speak Wookiees, and it's not the dumbest, most ridiculous thing in the history of Star Wars. The fact that they pulled that miracle off deserves sainthood, in my opinion.
Wait. Yeah, I speak a little. Now just listen to me, you.
And the reason why they probably didn't do it in the original, there's something really interesting about when a character cannot speak to the rest of anyone else except for the one. It's sort of the same thing with that Groot rocket sort of situation. It pair bonds them in a way that, you know, sort of exceeds the level of communication. I loved that. I loved the Chewie and Han sort of scene. I think thanks to Mr. John, not Connor, for saying that as far as Harry meets Chewie, because that's my favorite scene. Them learning their power, working together, Chewie being like, I'm not listening to you, I'm going the other way. And he's like, trust me, please. And then Chewie's just like, I shouldn't. But I just loved how it was Chewie really being like, okay, I'm not going to beat you to a pulp, even though I could.
Toughest scene for me. Ken, I don't know how you felt about this. It was the toughest scene for me to watch in this movie, just because it's Han and Chewie fighting each other. I'm so glad that the fight feels real, and it does feel like they both felt like, oh, we need to take down this other irritant, but it always felt like there was kid gloves. Weren't ever punches thrown. It's just kind of like wrestling with your older brother in the mud, and then they become friends, and they're like, phew, good, we got over that. I don't like seeing Han and Chewie fight. Made me feel queasy, but I love that scene and what it represented for the future of Star Wars.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Solo is a love story, and it's Han and Chewie, right? That Harry, when Harry met Chewie, is a great way to look at it there. And yeah, and that scene, Jacqueline touched upon it there. It's the power of connection, the power of working together. The main enemy in this movie is the Empire. It's the oppression of the Empire on the neck of the galaxy. That's what the story's about. It sets up I'm right there with you, Jacqueline, on Rogue One and the straight fire it brings on why we need to fight. Star Wars wants you to choose. Wants you to choose side. And this scene represents all that. And also, it's just damn fun and a play on them in Return of the Jedi. I'm all right, pal. That whole scene, and to play it against that scene, it's really fun.
No, it is. Yeah, I'm all. Yeah, that is a great scene for Return of the Jedi. Don't want to be low on Return of the Jedi. I think it's amazing, but I'm sorry, when Princess Leia's like, hope, like, that is the best ending in the history of everything. Like, that is like literally
like
one of
you
the
say
best,
that, Jacqueline.
Best
I,
enemies. Yeah.
I don't tolerate a lot of Return of the Jedi slander, and I don't think you're delivering that today, but it is nice to hear how much you adore Rogue One and how it leads us right up into A New Hope. With as far as the Imperial aspect of Solo goes, the two scenes that really stick out to me are, one, the amazing way that Ron Howard conducts that shot of the Kessel Run, where you're doing well if you complete the Kessel Run in 20 parsecs. Now we're trying to cut through a maelstrom to do 12 parsecs. And so the Millennium Falcon is earning its wings here. But then all of a sudden, lo and behold, we run into a freaking Star Destroyer. And then these TIE fighters are coming out and chasing us, and we get that classic notes of the Empire March, and we get to hear the TIE fighter wail, which for my money is the most important sound effect in the history of Star Wars, even more than a lightsaber, even more than a blaster. Hearing the TIE fighters screech is the coolest thing in the world to me. So you get that, but then you also get the backstory of Han Solo's name, which is such a point of controversy as to how Han got it. He's checking in at the beginning to become part of the Imperial Army, and so... And this is all just a means of escaping off of Corellia, right? And so he can go in the infantry, but he says, I really want to be a pilot. So he's trying to apply to be a pilot. They ask him, what's his name? Han. And who are your people? He doesn't have any people. And so the Imperial officer's like, I got to write something. I write Solo. I thought it was a cool moment.
What's your name, son?
Han.
What? Who are your people?
I don't have people. I'm alone.
Solo. Approved. Proceed to transport ID 83 for the Naval Academy at Kurita. Good luck, Han Solo.
Yeah, dude. let's be honest, like, Han is not coming up with that, like, granted, he is brash and cocky as the day is long, but I just don't think he's going to be like that. But the minute he said it, he was like, I kind of like that, which is actually more fitting of what the character sort of brings to it. I'm thinking you guys saved it for your resident black girl to say it, but obviously everything that Donald Glover did in this movie was fire. He was absolutely, I think, not only perfectly cast as Lando Calrissian, showed a very interesting younger Lando Calrissian that, like, oh, I can see how this grows into Billy Dee Williams, but I know specifically this is not, he's not that character at this point. Like, he's very much faking it more than making it, which is part of Lando's thing, but he just gets better at it as we get into the further sequels. So I loved everything he did, but the scene that I loved particularly is when Phoebe Waller-Bridge's droid character dies and he's like really mourning her. That was when I was like, oh, that's like a really tender moment. But also I was when I was like, oh yeah, he absolutely had sex with that droid. I absolutely think he had sex with that droid.
Yeah, how's that work, Ken? You're the Star Wars expert. How do those parts fit?
I don't know, but when he, look at that scene again, you're like, I love my dog. I do. But that is not that kind of love. That is not that kind of love. I'm sorry. What about you, Ken? Any other like particular memorable scenes outside of sort of the rebellion folks and them?
I mean, I love what you're both are saying too. I do want to comment on that. Like the Han Solo gets his name scene. That's built in the history of Star Wars. There's a source book. I think it's a storybook or something in the late 70s after New Hope, where Luke Skywalker looks at Han and says, "That ain't his name. That can't be his name." And so to finally kind of get that, I know it landed clunky for some people, but it's about the cruel indifference of the Empire. It's a Tuesday for this guy. I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. Come join so we can send you to get killed. I don't care. What's your name? And they do there's this little shot that kind of pan in on Alden, and Alden is literally acting out the next 40 years of Han's life. The tension between Han is, I want to be one thing, but I know I'm one thing, and I'm always fighting that, and I'm always running away from what that is. He carries that with him up until the moment he dies, because that's one of the last things his wife says is, go get our son. You can't run away from this. This is on you. This is for you. This is for us. Go get her son. And he does that in that moment. He dies and his cheek touch is an act of compassion that saves the galaxy. That starts in this moment for me. It's such a big, powerful scene and I love it. And when Uncle Bob Iger kind of let that slip in an investor meeting, I was like, I don't know if we want to see that. I thought the execution of it and the choice of both actors in that scene played really well. So I love that. And Jacqueline, I don't want to just steal both of your guys' answers. I love Donald Glover in that moment with L3, because that's what Lando is. He's the survivor. He Billy Dee Williams has commented on this. He goes, you know, a lot of people say Lando sold out his friends and Empire Strikes Back and he was kind of a scoundrel. I didn't. That's not the case. I'm a survivor. And the only person who keep me safe is me. And I do what I need to for me. And at the bottom of that is this great heart. And I thought that moment specifically, Donald Glover found the heart of Lando. And it was a beautiful scene. And I love that moment. No matter what happened between them, I'm not judging.
I'm not judging it.
For a long time. Good for
I'm it. Not judging it, but I remember very distinctly on that press tour, Donald was like very forthwith. This is obviously something that happens all the time in Star Wars, and they never really let it happen on screen. But Donald was talking about it. He's like, Lando is pansexual. He'll get it in where he can fit it in. And he literally said it just like that. And I don't think he did that because he was like, oh, he's probably interested in both Daenerys and Alden. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm so sorry, Emilia Clarke, I do know your name, but she's also Daenerys. Like, that's who she is.
I remember Chris Rock released lately kind of a jokey hip hop single called No Sex in the Champagne Room.
Yeah.
I do not think that's the case with the Cape Room. There's a Cape Room in the Millennium Falcon. And I think that if you took a black light into the Cape Room, I think there'd be a lot of things that you're looking at. It would look like a Rorschach test. Now, again, I don't know if our audience can handle that. Brian, our great engineer, might have to cut that out. But that's just how I feel about Lando Calrissian younger. Donald Glover's fantastic. Donald Glover's so good. And L3 is so funny. Like, that's the thing, is that Star Wars, really, the comedic relief usually doesn't come from the humans. It usually comes from the droids, whether it's C-3PO or R2-D2 just making a comment. L3, falls into that K2SO mode very, very well, where they're their own unique character. Even though they're a robot, it still feels like that is, as Jacqueline said, your dog. So whether that's you know, Lando getting very fresh with his dog, or even when you see Poe Dameron, how much Poe loves BB-8, though, like that's me and Molly the Wonder Dog's relationship playing out on screen.
Not with Lando. I'm sorry. I know you love Molly.
Molly and I don't take it to Lando L3 territory.
It is very intimate. You're more of the Poe Dameron
BB-8.
And BB-8. But also, let me go ahead and put it to this way, and I have to shout her out again. Friend of both Mark and myself, Dani Fernandez, who absolutely has to come on the pod eventually because we've mentioned her name so many times. But she had the greatest quote about Han Solo. She's like, yeah, he's great and all, but let's be real. He's a middle-aged man who lives in his car with his dog.
She did that on
my gosh, since she said that, I was like, it makes it harder to fantasize about him.
If y'all could have seen that joke play in the room, because I was in the auditorium, it was like a huge arena at Comic-Con and they were taping a sci-fi show. The name of it escapes me, but they have a panelist of, you know, geeky friends and comedians, and you're kind of debating each other as far as fictional characters. And when that line hit, I mean, the audience, it was like I was in the main room of the Comedy Store. It just hit so hard. So I keep telling Producer Lucy, once we have a Goofy movie, we'll have Dani on.
Yeah.
But for this, you know, you talk about Han Solo and you really do learn a lot of his motivations. So much of this was sort of criticized as fan service at the time. And I don't know that there's ever going to be a happy medium between, look, if you're a character as iconic as Han Solo, you're telling the backstory, there's going to be reasons why you became the way you are, why you became the guy that we fell in love with. And we as the audience, that's why we're showing up to this movie. So we want to, I'm a fan. I want to be served much the same way where if I go sit at Chili's, I don't want to get up and go make my food myself. I want to be served.
I mean, I get it, but there, I think with the Solo, it was less about being served or fan service. This movie, like, and we'll get into it in the behind the scenes, it was behind the eight ball. I think a lot of people didn't want to know how he became who he was.
It's fair.
I think they just were like, it's like the Joker. I don't want to know how the Joker became the Joker. Just leave him to be the Joker. But the cool thing is by getting his backstory, we get to find all of these other cool characters that came along with the rest of the story. Like you get the Woody Harrelson, you get Tandy Newton, you get all of these, I think, interesting folks within it of the side folks. And I'm going to go ahead and take obviously anybody that shows up in later installments out. So no Lando, no Han. Who resonated with you guys of the new characters we got to see in this one? Villain, you know, like or sort of ally? And Ken, I'll start with you.
You've listed off a wonderful collection of new characters. I love Val and Beckett. I'd love to hear a little bit more from them. I'd love a prequel with them intertwined with the character of Enfys Nest. I really am always going to bang the drum of more Aaron Kellyman as Enfys Nest. I talk about this theme of survival. That is this big, giant theme of how do you survive? How do you find hope within the fear? You fight back. Enough is enough. That's why one of my favorite scenes in the movie is her big reveal isn't this. It's a takeoff of the mask, and she's like, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I want to drink because I'm done fighting alone. I need your help. We need your help. Do you want to join up? And it's very powerful, and it's also just a great design in terms of Star Wars. Like, hey, that's a cool design. Like, right in my studio, I have Enfys Nest and her speeder bike up there because it's one of my favorite designs. But I just absolutely love that character, and there's so much more that ties into Rogue One with Saw Gerrera, and just how we fight and why we fight. The hyperfuel is not just some mindless MacGuffin. And it is hope, as she says. It's a new beginning, and they're fighting for their own lives, and the Empire's controlling those resources. So there's a lot of people love Enfys Nest. I'm certainly not alone on that. She represents so much to me in Star Wars, and I want more of that character.
I'm gonna go ahead and I'm actually gonna head over to Producer Lucy, who's been giving me some great, I will say, play acting. Whenever we talk about this, because I feel like she is like a bit upset with our assessment of Solo.
Question, Producer Lucy here. It's called Solo, but Han Solo's not in it. What the hell are you guys talking about?
Literally,
I started watching this movie last night, And I had to turn it off after the name part, the him getting Solo as his last name. Not because of that moment per se, which I thought was lame, but I love Alden Ehrenreich. I love him. He's not Han Solo. And he's a good actor, but he was schmacting. And I could tell he was really trying to do Harrison Ford stuff. But I even felt like the writing of the character, it wasn't him. Like, Han is one of the funniest characters in the Star Wars universe. I did not laugh at all in the movie. Whereas in the originals, I always laugh when Han says something. And the screening that I went to, nobody else laughed. And I don't think it's Alden's fault. I think, and maybe you guys will get into this in the behind the scenes, but like literally I was like, Han Solo is my favorite character. I don't think he's in this movie.
Yeah,
I don't
there
know
we
that
go.
Han is like, I never looked at Han as like the funny guy. Like, I get that he has lines that can come off comedically, but he's not like, he doesn't have suspenders and he's like, hey, whoa, that was a close one. Like, he seems like such his own sort of cowboy character that can come off as comedic at certain points where it's intentional. But like, I had the same concern as Producer Lucy did walking into this movie. Ken, when, you know, anybody is cast as somebody as iconic as Harrison Ford, especially as Han Solo, you're like, oh, I don't know if you're going to be able to pull this off. I really did buy Alden Ehrenreich as the younger version. It was almost like you're watching a child who you know is going to grow into the skin of this much older guy.
Yeah, I've said before, Alden Ehrenreich is more Han Solo than Harrison Ford in Return of the Jedi. It is an amazing performance to me, and we all have our own takes and opinions, and Lucy's is honest to her, and she's not alone in that. It was a monumental hard task, right? I mean, how can you climb that mountain as Harrison Ford? But Han's not a funny character to me. The character comes from the tension inside him. It is the blustery, brash, we're going to figure this out, loud, and then quietly, I don't know how we're going to figure this out. And it's the comedy of character. I don't think there's been a joke written from Han other than even some stuff from Return of the Jedi maybe might be his worst humor. And that's why I just love what Alden found in those moments. Even going back to the Coronet City thing where he gets his name, it's like, to me, that's the next 40 years of Han are in those eyes. And so I've always taken it. But again, you know, it's subjective, right? So if Han's not there for Lucy, Han's not there.
I mean, and I don't want to disagree with Lucy because she, like, again, guys, I really do hope if you're watching this visually that they cut over. I have no, like, say in the edit process, but editor, if you hear my prayer, get Lucy going nuts every time we gave this movie any kind of praise. She wanted to rage through the screen. It's good. It's good TV. Let me just tell you. But, you know, I think we'll get into this in the behind the scenes, but I do think there was a lot of questions about Alden. There was a lot of questions about Ron Howard. There was a lot of questions about whether or not we could tell stories in the Star Wars universe that were compelling outside of the trilogy. Because at that point, the trilogy had started to sort of dip down. Because at that point, Force Awakens, the original three were the only ones that seemed to be universally beloved, also make a lot of money, and everybody liked them. Last Jedi sort of made a lot of money, but it had a very divisive reaction. And this was sort of supposed to right the ship, maybe, but it didn't. I don't know. I'm going to ask our resident comedian, then I'm going to ask our guest comedian, is this movie funny enough? Because that was the biggest complaint, especially knowing who the original directors were, how much they are known for comedy, Lord Miller. Do you think it's as funny as it needs to be, Mark?
Yes. I've never gone to Star Wars movies needing to laugh as much as, say, an MCU movie, where I really do rely on that humor. I know there's going to be a sense of humor in Star Wars. And again, I made the point before, I look to the droids for that sort of comic relief. I'm not looking for my lead characters to be outright funny and to be cracking jokes. If there's going to be some fun moonlighting tension between Han and Leia or Han and Kira or Han and Chewie or Han and Lando or Han and Beckett or Han and anybody, then that's fine. That's all welcome because it makes them feel like real characters. It humanizes them even if their species is not human. But I don't need that from Star Wars the same way that I would need it from an outright comedy or something that is based on a comic book. I mean, I would prefer the level of humor we got in this version of Solo as opposed to what we were hearing we might get with a Lord and Miller Solo.
Okay, what about you, Ken?
Big fan of Lord and Miller's work with Will Forte. Will Forte is one of my favorites. Last Man on Earth, one of my favorite shows. I am so glad that we did not get what you hear behind the scenes might have been the visions. Star Wars is funny and fun, but again, the comedy comes from character. That's not how the Force works. Isn't a joke in Force Awakens. It's Han in that situation from his past and where he is now explaining it to this wonderful character that's just kind of like, yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to run with it. Well, right? That's how it works. And Han is the one going, no. I have no plans. That's not the plan. And to me, that's how Han's humor works here. So overall, was it funny enough? Yeah. L3 had some funny moments. Chewie with two drinks. I mean, who doesn't love Chewie double fisting drinks at a gangster party? Yeah. So for me, it did work. I think sometimes that narrative of, oh, Lord and Miller, we're going to be there. And again, they're clearly super talented individuals and a team. I'm not ever going to say anything bad about that. They know what to do. But I just, Star Wars sometimes is, it's a different beast, a different animal. And so I'm very happy with what we got and do laugh along the
way. Yeah. Star Wars is definitely a different beast, definitely a different animal, which I think the beastie animal part is what we're going to get into. We talk about behind the scenes because we've actually tiptoed around it. But the drama surrounding this movie's release, production, post-production, on set, everything, it rivals an episode of Real Housewives of anything. Like, legitimately, this was drama to the capital D. Oh my Lord, there was so much going on with this movie. And I really want to talk about it because I kind of disagree with you guys. I want to see that Chris Miller, Phil Lord movie. So let's go ahead and talk behind the scenes. So this is where my as promised name drop is going to happen. So Lord and Miller, I covered very closely when Into the Spider-Verse was going up for its Oscar. And that movie was such a long shot to beat the sort of Pixar machine that has won so many of the animated Oscars. And so I actually got to talk and meet with them a long time, like multiple things. Chris actually sat at my table at the Oscar nominee luncheon and we chatted at that. And I cannot tell you how, as a reporter, I am failed at a human being, how many times I really just wanted to ask him, just tell me what happened. Like, just like we can just tell me what happened. Like, I really wanted to be his therapist. I'd be like, because look, you're going to win an Oscar probably. You won. Like, they won. They won the whole thing. Like, your ex breaks up with you and you come home with an Oscar. Guess what? You won. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you won. But I so wanted to know it. But the closest I ever got was that he did say, and he said it publicly, it was like at a Q&A, that working on this movie definitely taught him to fall in love with movie making again, because their last experience really jaded them on the process of making a studio movie. So that's all they ever said. I'm not giving any behind the scenes. They said this in a Q&A that I did, but that was like interesting to me because it felt like somebody who literally went through a very abusive relationship that came out on the other side, which was interesting. Ken, what did you think about all of that?
It's fascinating stuff. I'd love to, you know, probably with some sort of a bunch of agreements signed with all parties. We'll never really hear the true story, but I do love Ellis Knows. Yeah. We'll spend a lot of time talking about, yeah, one of my favorite books is Late Shift by Bill Carter. Give me all the dirt. But unfortunately, sometimes the way in movie coverage and in the world of digital movie coverage outside of official channels, like, that kind of becomes the narrative, and some of it could be false. There's so many rumors. I don't know. You know, I heard they want to, hey, you want to do a Star Wars movie? Yeah, we'd love to do a Solo movie. Well, Larry Kasdan, the guy who kind of helped create him or build him up, already has a script. Do you want to do that? Yeah, sure, we'll do that. And let's improvise to move away from Larry's script, and tales of producers hiding notes from Kathleen Kennedy to them, and this and that, and Alden calling Kathleen to basically quit, and it's not working well. Emilia Clarke publicly saying, I asked for notes on my character, and I was told, I don't know, just be like a, you know, femme fatale. And that's not a character, that's not a note, as I'm paraphrasing what Emilia said. It's juicy. Jacqueline, it's juicy stuff.
Yeah.
And I always look at Ron Howard as the old football coach that the young coaches with the great offensive plan that worked in college, it wasn't working out here in the NFL, so they got fired. You bring in the old guy with the clipboard and the shorts that go up to his elbows, and you say, just kind of take the, calm down the locker room and get us to the playoffs. And I always look at Ron as that guy. So, yeah.
Calm down the locker room and get us to the playoffs. Damn, son, if that ain't the sentence right there.
Yeah. And well, that's what you needed. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you did.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ken.
No, I'm just saying in the end, I'm spitting rumors and spilling. Well, what was we'll never really know unless Jacqueline can get one of them to talk. And I trust that she could if she wanted to. It's almost not fair to the movie. It's like that became bigger than the movie. And I have one of my friends. His cat is named Lando. He didn't see this movie till this year. He was like, Lando's his cat. He's like, I didn't really hear. I don't know what it was about. And I don't know. I finally watched it. Hey, I love it. And that happened a lot. And a lot of that, look at you, Uncle Bob Iger. I love you, Bob Iger. I got your book down here. I'm not supposed to root for CEOs, but I've always liked Bob Iger. He made a big mistake on that May release.
What folks have to realize about Solo when it came out is that it was not just one iron in the fire. It wasn't just one monkey in the wrench that was causing all of this dystopian mass hysteria about the movie. You have to look at it from the perspective of when this movie was announced, when it was announced that Lucasfilm was going to be making a Solo standalone movie, you're already playing on a house of cards, because I still contend to this day, I didn't need this movie to exist. It wasn't the most necessary movie in Star Wars canon for me to need. Like, I didn't need to know the backstory. I had a great time watching it. I didn't need it. So if we go from that premise that it's something that we might want, but we don't need, and now we have these two directors who I think are comedic revelations. I think Lord and Miller are amazing at what they do. And then you hear about how they're improvising too much and it's not jiving with what Lucasfilm wants. And now you're playing off of the prospect of Rian Johnson directing The Last Jedi, where everybody seemed to be on board with that movie before its release. Then it comes out and it's a very divisive film. And so now we're saying, oh no, did Lucasfilm give too much freedom to Rian Johnson to do what he wanted? Because it didn't feel like he took a lot of the batons from J.J. Abrams. I'll contend that he did, but that's a different conversation. A lot of the fans think that Kathleen Kennedy gave Rian Johnson all the freedom he wanted, and that was a backfire. And so now it appears that a reactionary Lucasfilm is saying, hey, we can't give Lord and Miller all the creative freedom because we just did that with Rian Johnson, and the fans didn't universally applaud it like they did the classic trilogy. So now we need to just play in this sandbox that we at Lucasfilm think is the best. Lord and Miller aren't the guys to do that. We need just the steady old hand director like Ron Howard coming in like backup quarterback Steve DeBerg, where you know they're going to come in and just be reliable to do the job we want. Still put their own spin on it, but do the job we want. And the fact that this movie was released 6 months after The Last Jedi, in the wake of all of that stench, not from the movie, but from the fans debating it, I think all of those played a factor. I think this has nothing to do with the Memorial Day release date. I've heard that bantered around that, oh, Star Wars isn't just, Star Wars had six movies come out during the beginning of the summer, and they did pretty well. Those are the classic trilogy and the prequels. So I don't think it has anything to do with release date. I think the fact that it was sandwiched so closely next to Last Jedi and the backlash of Last Jedi all became factors in this movie having the perception it did.
Yeah. Just to recap for everyone who maybe didn't get on the Kathleen Kennedy, Lord and Miller thing, I should have set this up. So Lord and Miller were the original directors of this. Larry Kasdan wrote the script. Kathleen Kennedy hires them to do it. All of the things we talked about, they get unceremoniously fired, and then Ron Howard comes in to finish it out. That's like all we know officially. Just wanted to make sure, because if somebody doesn't know, that's the order of the events. We're kind of talking inside baseball without setting up the play. But that's what happened with that one. I don't know, man. I do think they changed their mantra, because like, let's look at this. This is all of the craziness that has happened in the past five-ish years with Solo movies. So Rogue One, Gareth Edwards was literally replaced halfway through the movie, and it was finished by Tony Gilroy. You can tell that based on the fact that the marketing materials that first came out for the movie are essentially marketing a different movie than what we got. Josh Trank was supposed to direct a Boba Fett movie that got canceled because he was Josh Trank. Colin Trevorrow left Rise of Skywalker and was replaced by J.J. Abrams after he basically saw, he's like, Rian Johnson is the nicest guy in the world and they hate him. I ain't doing this. Patty Jenkins quit the Rogue Squadron over creative differences. James Mangold had his Boba Fett film that he was taking over for Trank also canceled. Benioff and Wise walked away from their Star Wars or were pushed after that last season. Rian Johnson was supposed to get a trilogy. That didn't happen. And then, of course, this, Lord and Miller and Solo. So that's all director drama that happened in or around these movies. Thank you so much, Mr. Mark Hoffmeier, for detailing that out. But y'all, like, it's like the way it was with the MCU at the beginning. It's kind of hard to be a director in the Star Wars universe, Ken.
It is, and it should be hard to me. And it, like I said, I love that we don't know. We will never really know all these stories. I really want these stories. The Trevorrow one, if you look at the proposed alleged leaked script, there's some great stuff in there. More Rose Tico is a good thing. Bala Korsin. He also introduces the concept of necessary rage, that a Jedi must touch the darkness to find true balance. That goes against everything George Lucas sets. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes Kathleen Kennedy is protective of George's Star Wars core, and I don't think she'll get the credit of that. She's also the fall person for that. And not everything... Clearly, the list you just read, Jacqueline, not everything's gone smooth. And that's disappointing to me as a fan. I think that sometimes becomes a tidal wave of a narrative outside the actual films. I love to engage with what the stories are. What are these stories telling me? What's there for me as a Star Wars fan? And that's where I get my joy from Star Wars. The other stuff is fun. But yeah, it should be difficult, and it is difficult. And the MCU is so oiled. It's a well-oiled machine, and directors know how to play with that system, or they don't.
It's so tough for me because, look, we all love gossip. We all want the juice. We all want the details. We all want the hot takes on Twitter. But there's a reason when they do marriage counseling, they do not invite the children into the marriage counseling session. It's because that is supposed to remain private behind closed doors. Here's a spicy take for everyone. Fans do not have the right to know what is happening in Lucasfilm, whether somebody gets fired or somebody gets hired or who likes what in a script or who is improvising too much off of somebody else's script. Fans pay to see a movie. You pay 10 or 12 bucks for a ticket, and the movie is the movie. I go back to my life as a comedian. You as a fan pay for a ticket, and I'm so grateful you did, because you get to see jokes that I've crafted. That does not give you the right to see me craft the jokes, to live the life that has led to those jokes. That does not give you a right to ask me a bunch of follow-up questions about how that joke came to be. If I'm doing a Q&A and you want to ask it, that's fair. But I think a lot of times we overstep our grounds as fans too. And this isn't just to the Star Wars universe, which I hold dear. It's to any movie where I appreciate everybody reporting, and I think it's necessary info to know who's doing what as far as going into a movie. But all of the strife, all of the yelling at each other, what did or didn't happen inside these closed door meetings, there's a reason why they close the doors, folks. It's because we want to see the finished product sausage. That's what we paid money to see. Trust me, if you ever actually watch sausage be made, you're not putting brats on the grill. Okay.
Yeah. And if you heard how many times Mark and I scream at each other in comedy green rooms,
I mean,
oh my God, it's horrible. Listen,
I appreciate that. And I really love that this particular thing has finally, again, Mark doesn't get his I'm going to rant on, but I'd love it when he does.
I had a couple of mini
so
ones.
So good.
Today.
Listen, I dig it, man. And this fandom will definitely cause that. Yep. We talked about the trolling. I don't think people who lived in entertainment journalism can really talk about how bad it was at that time with a real understanding. And I think it's going to take a few more years before we look back on this time, because like anything else, I think the fever is going to break. My sort of final words in the behind the scenes kind of break down like this, which is that Kathleen Kennedy, I agree, does not get the credit for half the things she does right and gets all the blame for things that she may or may not be involved in that go wrong. And that is more of a symptom of being a woman in a very powerful job in a very male-dominated fandom and periphery. And I think that's just a fact. That being said, one thing she is directly responsible for is who she hires. And listing off that name, I think you all kind of noticed a trend for the most part. There's a problem that Patty Jenkins had to make Wonder Woman before she felt she was a good enough director to do anything, and then her thing doesn't even happen. And it's a problem that when Nia DaCosta gets the job to direct Captain Marvel 2, she comes out with a quote saying, oh man, we really wanted to get her. What were you waiting on?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like nobody is preventing you. Like you are essentially that Eric Andre meme shooting someone and being like, I have no idea who shot this man. Like you did.
Yeah, it felt like Ava DuVernay was this close as well.
Yeah.
And then Wrinkle in Time came out and wasn't all that well received critically or commercially. And then it's like, oh, well, you had your audition and we just didn't like it. It's like, I didn't know that was my pro day to be auditioning for making a Star Wars movie, because you have a lot of directors who just, that was their first project. And so I do think that there is a discrepancy that should be addressed there. And again, these are all the kind of things that I think are worthy to talk about from us fans as well. But at the end of the day, if something's happening closed doors, it's not necessarily our right to know about it. It's our right to yell about it after the fact at Denny's, where I'm so glad I'm not talking about this movie. Because Denny's was promoting it, and there was a tie-in with one of the places that I worked. And so I was at Denny's for like five times talking about this movie. And like, I just wanted to not be a Disney show anymore and to start being a Denny's show, because I agree with a lot more of the decisions Denny's makes than Disney.
Oh my gosh. I really want to just picture that sad mark above his grand slam. Like, that is really like just so over it. And Ken, like, still ready to be.
I think Ken still has a Denny's menu that is Han Solo themed.
I did. I got to go to the press event at El Capitan with Denny's, America's Diner, and Han Solo. And I eventually, Mark, I finally, in honor of you, got rid of that menu. It's in some dumpster in Burbank.
Oh my God.
Okay, go dive.
Well,
go dive.
Yeah, first. I mean, I'm glad you got rid of it, honestly, because I shudder to think about that. It's just going to be
Jacqueline,
so sad.
Can I be honest with you? Ken didn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
No, ask my fiance. It's gone.
Yeah, I was to say, I think the fiance maybe gave that little thing a nudge. All I will say is we all can look forward to, it looks like Taika Waititi is going to be directing a Star Wars movie, and I'm excited for that one. So maybe we're turning the page. We got a brown person. We will get a woman, maybe, eventually. All right, we're going to go ahead and end behind the scenes, because we're going to open up the mailbag this week. It is back. Okay, from a member of the Ketchup crew, Sammy. Dear RT, may I suggest a movie trilogy to review? The Mighty Ducks. I was one of those 90s kids who loved The Mighty Ducks, and I really loved D2 and only tolerated D3, as in some ways ashamed of it, and I didn't talk about it because the reviews were so bad. As an adult, I discovered that there is a not so small cohort who loved it, including Margot Robbie, Adam F. Goldberg, J.J. Watt, and occasional RT contributor Joyce Eng. Enough to spawn specifically a dedicated podcast, the Quack Attack Podcast, and it's also got a reboot, although, you know, everything's rebooted these days. I'd love to hear y'all's take on it. Sammy, first of all, let's talk about this. You are in the know, girl.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did you know about Adam F. Goldberg and Margot Robbie enjoying it?
I've never seen a Mighty Duck start. I think I might have rented the first one because I just loved Emilio Estevez from Young Guns so much. I've never seen D2 or D3. I hear D2 is like the Terminator 2 of that franchise, but I can't recall seeing a Mighty Duck start to finish. So I'd be up for investigating that trilogy for the first time.
Yeah. There was a time when you would ask me what were the trilogies that surpassed the original. I'd be like, The Godfather Part 2, Empire Strikes Back, and D2. That was like the ones that I would put out there. What about you, Ken? You quack, quack?
No, I mean, like Mark, the two greatest movies of all time are Young Guns and Young Guns 2. Yep. So I'm surprised I didn't see any of the Mighty Ducks. I have gone to Mighty Duck Games, or the Ducks now. But this is great. And I love this. I love that when generations just grab onto these films and they mean everything. I love that stuff. I'm an 80s kid.
Is there a team named the Ducks, like after the team?
The Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. Yeah, yeah. Now I think it is just the Ducks. Yeah.
Anaheim.
That is,
you know,
ridiculous.
Disney's backyard. They were the Mighty Ducks. Yeah. I think they quack at games. I think years ago they had Emilio Estevez come out and drop the pucks. So the Mighty Ducks, it's still a real thing in the NHL.
Yeah, I did not know that. And let's be honest, in Texas and in Alabama, nobody was caring about hockey.
Nobody's
like
playing.
At all. At all. I remember Stars got good when I was in college, and I remember thinking to myself, I was like, I still don't care. It's cold. There's ice. And at that point, I didn't even think there was any black people playing. So I was like, I don't care. There are now, though, I've heard.
Yeah.
I have heard this.
Yeah.
That's it for the mailbag. Ken, thank you so much for joining us. It is always a pleasure to chat with you. Please let us know where folks can find you and also what you're working on.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. I know I go on and on about Star Wars and stuff like that, but it just means the world, and I love this film. Love talking about it with both of you here. As far as what I do, co-host the Force Center podcast with Joseph Scrimshaw, available wherever podcasts are podcasted. And I wrote a book called Why We Love Star Wars. And if you like music, I'm an old radio DJ who's back in the game. I have a show called Pop Rock and Radio on Mixcloud as well. So thanks for having me.
Oh, and since you are also a movie and TV person in the know, something that you've watched recently or caught up on recently that you want to recommend for our folks?
Yeah. Can I answer 4 hours at the Capitol?
4 hours at the Capitol is great. Yeah.
It's amazing. But beyond serious, somber things that make you angry, I didn't watch Dexter the first run, but listened to it while my fiance rewatched it, and we both just completed Dexter New Blood. And I thought that was a wonderful slow burn of a series that did some wonderful things in terms of themes of attachment, growth, and who you are and obsessions. And I absolutely love that show, so I recommend that.
Another bout of light viewing, The Capitol and serial killers. Love that. Love yes. that for you.
Just
love
if you want to laugh today. If you just want to laugh.
You're looking for a giggle. All right. Again, on behalf of Producer Lucy, Tim Ryan, Brian Perez, and of course, my co-host, Mr. Mark Ellis, that is it for us today. Thank you all for listening. We want to remind you yet again, wherever you are listening, please rate, subscribe, follow, and be like Sammy. Sammy sent us a nice little mailbag recommendation, and we might do the ducks. So you can also email us at rtiswrong@rottentomatoes. Up next week, Mark, we are going back to the island, right?
Well, maybe? We're going back to the other island. So there's Isla Nebular, and then that's where Jurassic Park was. And then there was another island. Can you believe it? That's where the dinosaurs are now. So we're going to the Lost World. Actually, we might be going back to Isla Nebular. I might be getting the Lost World and Jurassic Park 3, where there's nightmares about talking dinosaurs confused. And so we will sort all of this out, but we are talking about The Lost World, the direct sequel directed by Steven Spielberg to the 1993 beloved classic Jurassic Park. Does it hold up? We'll talk about it next week.
Yes, we will. And we will see you all there next week on Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. Bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.